Because I don't think we ever dealt with it. We've dealt with the Aleuts as a tribe, and I think this is just an extension of that traditional way of life, where we had the chiefs and the councils, the higher chiefs and the lesser chiefs. And they were the ones that decided everything for the villages. And I think that's what sovereignty is all about. They want a continuation of that kind of life. And the children, I think the children being left out is one of the worst parts of the act. The children will carry on after we're gone. Our leaders won't last forever, and we need to teach our young people to carry on and hopefully live in a better world that of their own making. But before we can do that, we need to recognize them. In the rest of the world, an inheritance goes on to whoever you will it to. But if you will your native shares to your children who are not shareholders, not stockholders, they have no vote as shareholders. They can inherit the shares, but they cannot vote if they're not at least a quarter native. Down the line, I can see a lot of our children who will not be a quarter native. And it's a shame that even though they inherit from us, that's who we want to talk for us after we're gone, they do not have that right at the present time. As far as whether I believe subsistence is as important today as it was at the time of ANCSA, I say yes. Subsistence is still a way of life in the Aleutians. There are villages who only just very recently got electricity. They could not keep their food more than a day or two because all of their food came from the sea without electricity. And to this day, they depend a lot on sea mammals and fish for their subsistence. They live on fish not only during the summer when they can get it from the sea, but during the winter when they have dried it to eat during the winter months. And the same with sea mammal meat, they dry that and eat that during the winter too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Are there others who wish to add something at this stage? Mr. Ewan?
I'd just like to mention one thing, and that is about sovereignty. I think it's a big issue statewide at the present time. I feel personally, myself, not being too involved in the last several years in a native corporation in my area, that we have to educate the natives throughout the state on sovereignty before the issue is, you know, we come to grips with that issue. But as far as being an issue during the land claims, I don't recall it being a very big issue. I think that in several papers that were submitted, probably there was mention of sovereignty. I don't recall exactly, but I think it was in back of our minds, all these things like sovereignty, I don't think were totally discussed, like I say, but they were in back of our minds. And I think my thought at the time was, I think these things we'll deal with later. I think because of the time frame that we're sort of pressured into settling right now as best we could, and we'll deal with these issues as they come up. And I think right now we're at a stage where we have to deal with sovereignty. I think it's a very strong political, native political issue right now. I want to mention also that during the land claims, as I understand the overall overview is supposed to benefit someone, and I think that maybe it'll benefit other Native groups from other countries. We hassled over the blood quantum. I think that was, and probably today it's an issue again when you come to shareholders after born. I think that'll be an issue in the future when you decide where do you cut off the Native blood quantum. Where do you stop calling these people Natives? As I said earlier this morning, our goals, I think, are the same as we set out. We want our people to be better off. We want to be Natives, recognized as Natives, and be proud to be Natives. Our ways of doing it, I said, was a little changed. We have money to go to Juneau. We have money to go to Washington, D.C. We have a little more political power throughout the state, influence. I think the ways of doing changing for betterment of our people sort of changes not just how we accomplish our goal, not our main goal. And that's about all I say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ewan. Mr. Starr, did you wish to add anything, sir?
About the land claim and then about the land. The groups, the people that live out away from the villages, they were allowed 2 million acres. And only one group, I think there's one group here in the Cook Inlet that will get their land. Somewhere around Cook Inlet, somewhere around here. The rest, they said they're not going to give that land out after it went through the land claims. So things like that about the sovereignty. What I've seen in my travels is that some of the reservations is very good because they got control over their land. And in Canada, I guess you people went through cabinets quite a bit because that's highway, nice country around there. Cross river from there, there's Indian, little Indian village, and they own quite a lot of land. And there's not a thing, no other buildings on there beside that little village. But they own the land. They own the land. And any land that the Indians, any Indian villages should be, they control it themselves. They control their. And about that 2 million acres I'm talking about, after it passed in Congress, then the BAA said you can't get it. And I was supposed to go to court sometime on my group. And always since I can remember, the Indians are always trying to, well, the government told them around 1910 here in Alaska that you control your village and then we'll give you authority for anything like law. You could handle that if it's a small. You could handle that and things like that. So the Indians, the natives, Indians, the American Indians, like this lady was saying, that they told the Indians, we'll give you a piece of land. All right, well, the Indians want it. They said we'll always live here. And that's our best hope to survive after certain land. Then the government or somebody, settlers or somebody wanted, and they said, no, you move on, you move on. And hopefully, I hope something like this, the investigation of things like that, will make things like that a little better for them, for the natives, the American Indians. And for Canadians too, the Canadian Indians. Some places, you know, they be way out from some place down on the Fraser River, no place, and there's an Indian. He said, that's my allotment, he lives on that. The allotment of 1906, 1915, they took that, but then they couldn't live on it. Some died off, they were supposed to be turned over to their children, and that never materialized either because the state or the government again say that you didn't live on that like you promised. Things like that. So it's up to you. Like old Chief Isaac said, I haven't got no education. I haven't got no education. But the Indians always did try to protect their people, their children, and the future generations. So you could carry on because you're younger, and an old man like me, going on in the fire for, I thought when I was told to come down here to try to explain the first part of the Indians settlement, I thought I could listen to the people from the other parts of the world that will tell us our experience. And that's a good group because they all had experience, especially in South America. They didn't. I met a woman from Chile not too long ago, about a couple of years ago. She said, Al, what do they want to learn? They just kill us all. So they try that, the Spaniards try that, but they couldn't kill all the Indians. So the Indians in the United States said a long time ago that we might go down to nothing, but the day is coming when we will rise again to have our own little lands and there be Indian nation within the United States. And it was kind of encouraging. Last winter I picked up something, I don't know where it was, I was out in the country, that said that they had 1,700,000, and not too long ago there wasn't a million Indians in the United States. But now they're rising up again. So hopefully we're not finished yet. We've been here, and we'll be here for a long time, I hope. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Mr. Tiolana, did you wish to say something?
I try to express myself or defending our cultural values other than developing our resources and make profits. I'm not going to talk about the profits. I'm going to touch a little bit about our future human resources going to take over our corporation. I think there's a lot of ways to produce human resources that could be help us to our future life. Also, we touch a little bit about our schooling, how we are going to educate our children to be adopted to the corporate world. And I was going to talk about how we are going to unite ourselves and make better profits for ourselves. Like this old man said, we're going to be here all, maybe forever, talking about our problems. But I think it's sometimes we forget who we are. Just like some of us going out hunting for a moose or seals today. I think we have to educate ourselves some methods also. Because we are going out hunting all day long and try to find a moose or seal. And when do we find those games? Who's going to shoot it? The moose. Are we going to describe ourselves to be a better shooter? Just like a better policy for our corporate world? Next thing we know, with the arguments, who's going to be the best shot to kill the animal, and the animal's gone. Then we have nothing to take back home. I think that will be a better describe ourselves today, that we should learn, have better arguments among our native people. Because your cultural values, which I talk about this morning, I have some people, non-native people, told me, one is minister to church people, one is professional trainer for the United States government, and just one local non-native people. They all saying that if they adopt themselves to our cultural values, it could be better human beings today. That means that they encourage me to preserve our cultural values, because the other side party sees something in us to unite us. I think the state of Alaska is so small today because of transportation. We should look into our different cultural values in different tribes in Alaska and have a guidance with the better values to guide our corporations. And that way we could settle our differences quicker. Also, Richard Frank mentioned about the religion this morning, because some of our game values just like Lily McCarver said, it upgrade our facial values. I was attending a meeting one time in Anchorage here about religion. And when my time come to speak, I said, there's about 50 churches here in Anchorage. Which church is going to take me to heaven? Everybody laughed. I don't know what they kind of take it as jokes. Even in this society that we are trying to integrate, even the church people have differences. Our cultural values tell us the virtues of the Bible. Those things I see, sometimes I reject them. How come those religious people have differences while they praying for one God? That I have to look twice before I make a decision. Everywhere I look, I think there's make a better world for us. Like I said this morning, I'm not a very educated man in our school, but I learned a lot of things since I've been down here in Anchorage. Because in my home, my own home, I got some problems. Last spring, when my grandson killed a seal, I was real proud grandfather. I said to myself, this grandson of mine is going to feed me when I'm not able to go hunting anymore. I succeed in one of my grandsons, the way our ancestors lived. And I introduce it to our church because I don't find no alternative to make us better human being. Maybe this sacrifice through our church will guide my grandson to be a better human being. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tilana. Francis Dignan, did you want to add something now?
I agree with everything that's been said here by everyone. Everyone's touched on important issues that were important back in the early 60s are still important today. I live in Unalakleet, Alaska. I feel, you know, if we're going to be doing anything for ourselves and our community, to go back to the village, to work in your own village, if that's possible, is really the beginning toward the solution for keeping and retention of our land, because the land goes in patent to each identified group. And once we have the patent, I don't believe that the federal or the state government will take that patent away. They haven't taken it away from anybody else that has gained legal patent to their land. Although we have a lot of people that will try to talk us out of our patent, that will try to steal it from us, but by law we're legally protected. but it takes involvement of each one of us. And how best can we do that is to participate in every area that we can, encourage the younger people to get involved, whether they do are shareholders at this point or not, but they are part of your family. And I think that knowing in talking with our elders, their concern is that they've been here and we are going to continue to be here. So land is very important. The issue of sovereignty is very important also. As I see it, the Native people have always viewed themselves as a nation within their own and have continued that feeling through their own tribal traditions, their own clans, and their own family units, because it's tied to the land. And I don't believe that you're going to take that human element away as long as people are not dispossessed from their land. And we are always talking about education. Well, like Paul Tiolana said, he doesn't have a very much formal education. Well, I may have a little bit more than he has formally, but not the wisdom that he has gained through experience. And so it's very important that we encourage those of our own family to continue in areas that are fruitful and meaningful to us. And the one thing throughout these years that has bothered me is that our problems are identified by others. This was brought out earlier today. Somebody else is always telling us what kind of problems we have. And sometime in our lives we do have problems, but if we feel we can trust somebody, we'll let them know. But otherwise, if we're not at this stage going to be told that we have problems, and imposing upon us what kind of values we should have. Is it because our values that have been passed down from our forefathers are not workable? I feel that they are. What I get from the panel here is that they still feel they're workable. And when we talk about villages, I think one of our largest villages is here in Anchorage. Most of our people are here, and they pass through here most of the time. And what kind of services do we receive here in Anchorage if we're Native? Because what I'm concerned about is when the 1985 study is done, are we going to be required to take care of our own? Because we are landowners, we're equal. Those are, you know, things that need to be looked at, because what the settlement to me means that we're not required to provide social services and capital improvements and relieve the federal and the state governments in their responsibilities, because they do provide those services to the large populous areas. And that's all I have at this time.
Thank you. I was wondering, Anne, since you started this discussion off yesterday by reading your paper, whether you had anything to raise now or any questions that you wanted to bring up. If so, this is your chance.
I don't really have, well, I'm not sure if this will open things up again or really close it down. I mean, I think it's more sort of a statement that I think I should have probably begun with yesterday when you introduced me as an anthropologist, with all that that implies. Actually, what I was doing for the purposes of this review commission was in fact history. It was looking at a document and trying to, through a written document, draw some conclusions. And I don't think many historians, so I was being an historian in that sense, and I think very few historians would maybe be as fortunate as I have been to be here. And again, this was a documentation of natives and an attempt to reveal their aspirations and looking at those documents. Well, it's often possibly easier to do history on Western cultures where everybody writes everything down. Non-Western cultures maybe not so, do not always write everything down, and I feel extremely fortunate to have been involved in this discussion where people began to talk about things that underlay the test, or lay under the testimony that I was able to read, because I feel like I now can go back and read it again and see in it things that possibly I wasn't able to see before. Again, this is back to what I said yesterday, Don Wright's comment, and it has come up again and again today, the idea that sovereignty, tribal identity, that those were aspirations that were there since the late 60s. That wasn't as clear. It was clear to me in terms of the desire for independence and self-determination, but I certainly didn't see it in those terms. And I would now be encouraged to go back and look for that kind of intent in the testimony itself. I think that's sort of the most intriguing, some of the most intriguing information that's come out of the testimony over the last 2 days. So on some level, I have tried to write history, and today, with the input, we can try now to rewrite history, and it looks to me like where this is leading is to make history, which is sort of, so here we go. That's really all I have to say.
Rosita and Chuck, did you have anything you wanted to bring up or comment on before we go farther?
You're not supposed to give a clinket a chance to ask questions. I guess, first of all, just a commentary on the observations that I've made from the testimony and discussion here. It sounds as if ANCSA at the time was meant to be just a land transaction. I mean, not just, but a land transaction, and that other issues such as sovereignty and subsistence were not to be discussed, perhaps of political reasons, and perhaps as John suggested, that there were already laws in place, laws and judicial decisions that protected those other issues that enhance tribal identity, cultural identity. But then it also appears from the testimony offered here, and then certainly my analysis of the development of ANCSA, was that the Congress indeed had a policy or an objective, and that objective was economic assimilation. And so that seemed to be their intent, but yet on the other hand, Native people were seemed to believe that there were all of these other laws and judicial decisions that would protect those kind of things that were important to us. And yes, from today, you know, with the kind of issues that that are arising and developing today, we have a lot of questions about what was going on in that time period. I think there were, now there was just a commentary, but some specific questions that I would like perhaps John Burbridge and Fred Paul and perhaps John Hope might want to comment on is on the issue of sovereignty. We did have entities that were acting as if they were sovereign entities, such as Tlingit and Haida Tribal Council, Central Council. And then secondly, the other question that I have, and that was raised this morning with Harry Carter and Flory Lekanoff, and that was on the issue of fishing rights or territorial rights that extended beyond the land. And I think that, and perhaps again, the same might want to comment on the consideration of fishing rights or losses of fishing income in the Tlingit and Haida Central Council case.
Just before we do that, seated to my right is David Case, who teaches at the University at Fairbanks and is special counsel to the commission and was not able to join us until this afternoon. Just before we go on, do you have any questions or observations to make, David?
Well, I have. I feel that I've been here too short a time to really be able to have observed much, and much less to say much about it. One thing that does strike me, and it's a question I guess I have from the discussion we've had so far, and that is this question, the aspiration of the economic aspirations that seem to be focused on the Claims Act, and the relationship those aspirations have to other aspirations to promote, preserve, protect, enhance cultural values. And I hear it often said that there is not, that these are possible to do together. But I've heard here today that the Claims Act did not really succeed in many ways economically for individuals, elders, for example. They did not benefit economically from the Claims Act. So I have these questions, I guess, as to what is it possible to have continued economic development, and does that risk cultural values? Does owning land risk, and making economic use of land risk the traditional uses that are made of the land? And that's a question I have. I don't know if there is any answer or anybody who'd even want to respond to it.
Well, maybe we could, starting John Borbridge, just go around again, and that is until we reach the time to adjourn this afternoon, and make observations on some of these matters, then after we adjourn this afternoon, perhaps we'll try to frame some further questions to begin the discussion tomorrow. Sorry, did you want to say something? There's a microphone there.
Thank you, Honorable Justice Berger. My name is Paul Frost, and I'm a resident of Togiak. And at the time the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act was being discussed, I was too young to even take part in it, and consequently my mother signed me up to be a shareholder in the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I think one of the things I'd like to mention that a lot of people still have is the misconception that cash is an asset, or cash is wealth. In effect, cash is a debt, and it's only a claim on wealth. And some of the things that the main problem that I can see is that we have two bodies of law, I would think, that are clashing, and they would be law merchant versus the native common law. And this Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, that the state of Alaska holds all the charters of the corporations to, all it did is, the way I interpret it now and can understand it, is that it places us responsible for the federal deficit. And we have these corporations that we're all struggling and trying to find out what our self-determination is and what sovereignty is, and how can we achieve sovereignty within a corporate structure, when I feel that the best thing we could do is to go beyond questioning the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, and to understand that the corporations, in a legal sense, took away all of our land as individuals, all of our rights as sovereignty, and we're just surrendering what sovereign rights we had. And to even go and disclaim the corporations and to say that we'll become IRA is just jumping from the frying pan to the fire and giving our land to a trustee relationship with the federal government. I think what needs to be done, the way I understand it, is to stand up and start from this group here researching and looking towards sovereign issues with regards to the federal government, whether we want to be internally or externally sovereign. I think that the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act was a settlement for foreign state enterprises, for them to come in and extract our natural resources and to become rich off of our land and wealth and to realize profits in excess of $1 billion a year off the Prudhoe Bay oil fields alone, when in return, I, as an individual native, received $17,000 and supposedly 160 acres of land that I still don't have and never will have because the corporation owns the land, not the people. The corporation owns the money. And all of the corporations, especially the ones that I'm familiar with, aren't making any money, and it seems to me they were designed to not make any money. And the answer would be for us to discuss seriously, just forget about the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act and sit down and put together a bilateral agreement. And in the agreement, with us having an alternative to what we have now, we would forever receive royalties or benefits from whatever wealth, whatever oil, whatever resource is extracted from this land perpetually from now on. If we leave it the way it is now, my children won't ever realize any benefit whatsoever from the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act. None of our children will. In fact, it seems to me that the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, in a legal sense, is a declaration of war. It's going to do nothing but cause us to become further separated from each other. It's going to do nothing but take. And in the end, we will sit here and have these committee meetings, and I appreciate them with all due respect. But we can continue to have committee meetings and talk about these issues from now on until we have no more money to sit down and have these committee meetings. And that's about where we're going. I've attended committee meetings since I was old enough to attend these committee meetings, and nothing ever positive ever comes out of any of the meetings I've attended for the benefit of any particular group of Native people. I would hope to see more discussion and more education within the sovereignty issues for the Native peoples from a different avenue, from not interpreting the Native Land Claims Act at all. Just, I'd like to see the Native Land Claims Act just tabled and discussion about another settlement for the Native peoples as a whole. I think that if we were all independent, if the Native peoples of Alaska, through their entities now, realized sovereignty and had land and water rights and had the right to participate in the extraction and the profits of the resources, I can appreciate the fact that there's a culture and a lot of people would like to see it the way it was, and then again, there's a lot of people that wouldn't. But times are changing, they always have, and it's never going to go back to the way it was. I think that for the Native culture to continue to exist, the Land Claims Act has to be thrown out, and a whole new issue has to be brought up of sovereignty and sharing of the natural resources and its benefits from here on out, not just British Petroleum receiving the profits. Thank you.
Well, just before we go around again, I think it should be said, and I allow me to repeat what I said yesterday morning at the beginning, that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is a landmark, and it has been the means of holding and consolidating Native lands conveyed under ANCSA and for disposing of and making use of the funds provided under ANCSA. And it has, I think, obviously, given Alaska Natives economic and political influence in Alaska. And these are substantial achievements. I think the consensus among those who spoke yesterday and today and who were there at the time, and I say this, just forgive me, Mr. Borbidge, before we move on to you and to Mr. Wright and the others who know a lot more about it than I do, but clearly it was indicated that those who were working for a land claim settlement were dealing with a situation where they wanted to make sure that they did get as much land for Alaska Natives as they could, that is, get as much conveyed to them, patented, as they could. And they were dealing with a Congress in which many elements